Mountain matter. Is the Attorney General's representative with us in the Dalton case?
Yes, Your Honor. This is Chris Chandoval for the Commonwealth.
All right. Then let's turn to the Dalton case. Bear with me as I bring it up. All right. In the Dalton case, Mr. Grimes, you're still with us?
Yes, sir.
We're ready when you are, and do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Grimes, are you on speakerphone?
Yes, sir. Would it help if I picked up?
It would. I'm getting a little bit of echo through there.
Yes, sir. Doing it now.
Thank you.
All right. Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. This is Terry Grimes. I represent Darius Dalton in this appeal of a final judgment order. This is, of course, a criminal case from the Circuit Court for the City of Radford. There are three issues in this appeal. The first two concern the admission into evidence of certain text messages, or in one case, the contents of a text message, actually, and the sufficiency of the evidence. The Commonwealth, in effect, concedes the evidentiary error on brief, but argues that the error was harmless. I propose to get to that within the context of the sufficiency argument addressing the text messages first. So turning now to the text messages, the Commonwealth offered into evidence, and the evidence was admitted, of two text messages, which are Commonwealth Exhibits 5 and 4, offered in reverse chronological order, if you will. The first was a text message which purportedly came into the controlled informant, Paul Warren, on Christmas Day, December 25, 2011. And this is in our brief, and it's also in the addendum to the Commonwealth's brief, the photocopy, if you will, the text messages, and says, "I'm going to get a new number, so I'm going to send it to you. I lost my phone this street, S-T-R-E-E-T-S. You've got Kellams, K-E-L-L-E-M-Z number for me." And that comes in from a telephone number. There's no name there. 276-340, looks like 8708. The next message was Commonwealth Exhibit 4, which purported to come in the following day, December 26, 2011. And this one has at the top of the page of the exhibit streets, the name streets, S-T-R-E-E-T-Z, and says, "This is Streets, yo." The name spelled differently this time with a Z. "This is Streets, yo. This my new one. Lost my other phone. Send me something. Mike's numbers. Send me Mike's number when you get the chance, or you just send them." And I can't read the rest of it. Anyway, we objected to these two text messages on several grounds: hearsay, authentication, and relevance. The court overruled the objection and admitted the evidence. And we contend that admission of those text messages was error under our case law. I cite, just for example, on brief, Tuning versus Commonwealth and a number of other cases. That's one of the Court of Appeals opinions. And the problem here is the Commonwealth never tied the telephone number, 276-340-8708, to Dalton, so it was never properly authenticated, and it, of course, was hearsay. And parenthetically, Dalton later testified that it was not his number, and he never went by Streets. In other words, there was no, normally what you see in these cases is telephone records from Verizon or AT&T and some such, or some effort to tie the phone number to the defendant. That didn't happen here. And in the Tuning case, this court held that messages received, in that case it said over the Internet, but it also said it applied to text messages, are admissible against the sender only if the evidence establishes the identity of the sender, which it didn't here. That's our rule of law here. And we also cite a Texas case. We cite a series of cases, but they all say the same thing. The Texas court articulated the test in Butler versus State and said the prima facie showing is made by the Commonwealth concerning authenticity when it can show one of several things. One, that the sender admits authorship or was seen composing the message. We don't have that here. Two, as I've just told you, the business records of the phone company serve to prove the identity of the sender. Again, we don't have that here. Three, the communication communication contained information only the sender could be expected to know, and we don't have that. And four, the purported sender has responded to an exchange of messages in a way that indicates circumstantially that he was, in fact, the author of the particular communication, and we don't have...
Mr. Grimes, it's Judge Petty, I don't want to get you out of order, but I'm very curious to hear your argument as to why this isn't simply harmless. I don't see anything incriminating in either of these text messages.
Well, and if this is Judge Huff, if I may add to that, if you're among the objections you raised was relevance, if in fact you were correct that it was irrelevant, doesn't that also, wouldn't that suggest that it's harmless error at worst?
No, turning to the harmless error and jumping ahead, and with hope I'll have time to address the second text messages, there was no text messages conversation concerning it. But to address the harmless error jumping ahead, yes, it's not harmless for this reason. The evidence in this case against Dalton was razor thin. The evidence was that this Paul Warren was involved in a drug bust, if you will, at his apartment the day before the controlled buy, October 24, 2011, was the raid, in which scales and drug paraphernalia and marijuana and shotgun and so forth and an O sheet, that's OWE sheet, was recovered from his apartment, and Darius Dalton's name wasn't on that O sheet, and that's, you may know, that's his customers and drug dealers and so forth. And so the police told Warren, you have one choice, and that is to set somebody else up, and if you do, you won't be prosecuted. And so the next day, Warren did just that. What does this
text message or two text messages? I mean, I think your argument's well taken. It's not linked to the defendant at all. So if it's not linked to the defendant, how is it incriminating?
Because Paul Warren testified that on the day in question, which was October 25, 2011, he bought about a gram of cocaine from a man he knew only as Streets. And that Streets was Darius Dalton's nickname, and that he had dealt with Dalton on 100 or more occasions and didn't know his real name but knew him only as Streets. And then you have these text messages coming in, and that's how it relates back to the second testimony concerning a text message which occurred purportedly about the time of the buy, where the Paul Warren testified that he got a text message from Dalton that said, can I get a G? No, the other way around, that Warren sent a text message saying, can I get a G? And Dalton responded, yes. And we objected. There was no text message. That was just the testimony of Paul Warren, and we objected, saying that was not the best evidence. And there the Commonwealth didn't have the text message. So, again, all this goes to show that Darius Dalton was Streets. I mean, admittedly, a brick is not a wall, but a brick builds a wall, and that's what it was important to the Commonwealth to offer it for that very reason, that Warren testified that Dalton was Streets, and all this was to show that he was Streets. So we objected and contend that it should not have been admitted. But now back to your first point, which was well taken. Your first question was why isn't this just harmless error? Because the evidence against Dalton was marginal at best. I mean, Paul Warren testified that he was not a truthful person, that his perception and judgment was impaired by drug use, and was on the day in question.
How does a text message on his phone from someone nicknamed Streets bolster his testimony that the defendant was nicknamed Streets?
Because Warren testified that he bought the drugs from Streets on the day in question, October 25, 2011.
But your contention is that Dalton is not Streets, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
How does the text message in any way prove that Dalton is Streets?
Because Warren said the text message was from Dalton, that it was Dalton giving him his new telephone number.
But that's his testimony that incriminates him, and that goes to his credibility. But how does this text message in any way bolster his credibility? It could have been from anybody.
except Warren testified that he was dealing with Streets. And then sometime after these events, a couple months later in December, these text messages come in from Streets saying, this is my new number. This is my new number. In the eyes of the jury, that Streets, it looks like a drug dealer. And Dalton has, and Warren has already testified this was a drug deal. I purchased cocaine from Streets in October of 2011. Then 2 months later, I'm getting these text messages again from Streets saying this is my new number. And again, the Commonwealth offered evidence from Warren that Warren said that the drug buy was set up by a cellular telephone text message. And so the Commonwealth used all. It was important to the Commonwealth to offer because they were trying to show, well, this is Streets. Streets is a drug dealer, and Streets is the person seated at defense counsel's table. That's how it was all tied to Dalton. So, and as I've said to you, the evidence against Dalton was otherwise thin. The only evidence was Paul Warren's testimony, and Warren said he's not a credible person. And in addition, it was undisputed that he'd never been used as an informant by the Commonwealth before or since. He was simply offered the opportunity to try to do a deal to avoid prosecution, and he hadn't been prosecuted. So, and the Commonwealth, as I've said, on brief, in essence, concedes the evidentiary error, but says it was harmless. But it's not harmless because in a trial like this, it's things like this that. It's the only piece of documentary evidence that the Commonwealth had, which it tied to Dalton, which it submitted to the jury. So, in our view, it's not harmless error for that reason. It's the little things that tip the scale in a jury trial, and we think that's what happened here. I'll answer any additional questions you have, but the matter's well briefed. Otherwise, I'll just wait and reserve my time for rebuttal.
Judge McCullough, I agree with you that the issues are very well briefed on both sides, so that's why I didn't have any questions.
All right. You have, looks like, 4 minutes remaining. And now for the Attorney General.
Thank you, Your Honor. May please the Court. This is Chris Chandeville for the Commonwealth in this case. This was a credibility case from opening arguments all the way through the jury instructions. Mr. Warren's credibility was placed on trial just as much as Mr. Dalton's guilt was placed on trial here.
Mr. Chandler, yes, Judge Petty, you seem to concede that the two text messages of December 2011, that the foundation was not sufficiently laid to admit those. Would that be a fair reading of your brief?
No, that would be, Your Honor. I will concede that I could not come up with a good faith argument that they were properly authenticated. I agree with opposing counsel's arguments as to the fact that they were not sufficiently tied to Mr. Dalton.
And a second question, just to get your position clear on it, the text messages that were not introduced, they were only described. Do you agree that those would constitute a writing for purposes of the best evidence rule?
Well, my position on that is that, of course, Virginia courts have not yet decided the issue. So this court, if it wants to reach the issue here, can, if it decides to reach the issue before reaching the harmless error argument.
Well, I was looking at Rule 2:1001, definitions under the best evidence portion of our new code of evidence, and it defines a writing as letters, words, numbers set down by handwriting, typewriting, printing, photostatting, photographing, magnetic impulse, mechanical or electronic recording, or other form of data compilation or preservation. And that seems kind of broad. Wouldn't that include a text message?
That would seem to include a text message, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. But like I argue on brief, I think the court doesn't need to reach that issue here. If the court does reach that issue, I think on the merits as to Dalton's second assignment of error, I think the best evidence rule was satisfied when Mr. Warren was cross-examined as to why he was not able to produce these text messages, and he testified that he no longer had the phone. It had been about 2 years prior where he had sent these text messages, and he said no longer had the phone. He no longer had copies of the messages. And under the best evidence rule, as long as the last custodian of the original writing reasonably accounts for their unavailability at trial, oral testimony as to what was the content of those writings is permissible. And that's exactly what we have here. So on the merits, I think the best evidence rule was satisfied. Of course, as to the harmless error analysis, the Commonwealth didn't mention these text messages anywhere in opening argument and closing argument. Really, opposing counsel was able to make much more use of the unavailability of these text messages at trial during closing argument, as he argued to the jury that if there were such text messages that existed at one time, the Commonwealth would have been able to produce them. So he actually used their unavailability to argue that his client had been set up in all of this. And the Commonwealth certainly didn't need to and didn't attempt to rely on the testimony about how the drug deal was set up, because, of course, the Commonwealth had the informant's testimony about exactly how that drug deal occurred, and also had the audio recording of how that drug deal occurred. And also, as I argued on brief, the minimal probative value of all these text messages was cumulative. Other evidence offered at trial contained in the audio recording established that Mr. Dalton had agreed to sell a gram of cocaine for $55 to the informant. That was stated on the audio recording, not objected to. So that corresponds with those missing text messages where the informant asked if he could get a G, and Mr. Dalton replied, yeah. And then as to the other text messages, at best, they helped to establish that he, the informant, was receiving text messages from someone who called himself Streets. And as opposing counsel has well argued, nothing in the record tied Mr. Dalton to those phone numbers. So at best, they helped to prove that the informant was talking to someone 2 months after the fact who was going by the nickname Streets. Of course, on the audio recording of the drug deal itself, you can hear as he's leaving the apartment, the informant say, "All right, Streets," as he leaves the apartment. So we know that at the time of the deal itself, he was communicating with someone going by the name Street. So any evidence about text messages sent 2 months later was purely cumulative. So we would argue that error was harmless in this case. And finally, as to the sufficiency of the evidence, this was a credibility case. Nothing about the informant's testimony was inherently incredible. I do want to state for the record, Dalton mentions on opening brief and reply brief, argues that the informant was promised that he would not be prosecuted if he agreed to do a controlled drug buy. I think it's on the conclusion paragraph of the reply brief. No such promise was ever made in this case. There's no mention of any such promise in the record. The detective and the informant were both asked if any promises were made, and the testimony from both is that no such promises were made. He was told that he could agree to work for the government in hopes of receiving consideration. And that was all that he was told as to that. So this is a credibility case. The evidence was sufficient, and we would ask the court to affirm. Was there any further questions from the court? I'll rest on my brief.
Very well. Mr. Grimes, you have 4 minutes remaining if you need it.
All right. Yeah, I return to the argument. It seems the Commonwealth has, in essence, conceded that there were evidentiary errors, but that it was harmless, and I submit to you that, again, in this case where the only evidence was the testimony of Paul Warren, it was not harmless. And then I find, just quickly reviewing the Commonwealth.
Mr. Grimes, could I ask you to address one thing that the Commonwealth raised? Rule 2:1004 talks about the admissibility of writings, and it indicates that the original is not required if all originals are lost or have been destroyed. Why doesn't that address your concern?
It can't possibly be that easy for the informant to say, "I don't have the text messages and I don't have the phone," when clearly he had two other text messages. I mean, clearly he had the phone or text messages because he provided it to the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth offered it as evidence at trial. So it's simply, if that's all it takes to say, "Gosh, I lost it, I don't have it," then that have no best evidence rule.
Well, do you agree that if he did lose it, then the best evidence rule would be satisfied?
No, I don't agree with that at all.
Can you tell me why?
If all it takes is for him to say, I lost it, when the Commonwealth is sitting right there. I mean, in his left hand, he's got two text messages.
Suppose a nun saw him drop the cell phone in the river, and
yeah.
She said, I saw him drop it in the river. So it's a pretty credible piece of testimony. Would that satisfy Rule 2:1004?
Not here, because if you look at the photographs of the evidence seized by the Commonwealth from Paul Warren's apartment, there's the cellular telephone. They have the phone. So it won't do for him to say, I lost the phone, I don't have it, because Commonwealth has it. Commonwealth had the phone and the text messages and offered two of them into evidence, but not the third for whatever reason.
You're missing the point of my question. The point
yeah.
of my question is, suppose it is uncontradicted that he lost the phone. My question is losing the phone sufficient to satisfy Rule 2:1004 involving a text message?
My response is, why did he lose the phone? Was it convenient for him to lose the phone? And then he could say, make up anything about anything. He could say,
but then, this is Judge McCullough. Why wouldn't that then go to credibility as opposed to best evidence? In other words, best evidence is, unless you come up with a reason, you produce the originals. Well, you know, he can't produce the original. Well, if the jury can discern, or the fact finder, he's lying about something, then that's a separate question.
Yeah, I agreed. That's a separate question. And you know, I would, in your hypothetical, I think it was Judge Petty, that if a nun saw him drop the phone in the river, then maybe we'd have a problem. But we don't have those hypothetical facts. The phone is in the photographs of the evidence. So the Commonwealth has the phone. And the Commonwealth had two of the three text messages, if you will. So, credibility questions are for the jury to determine. I mean, there's no beating around the bush about that. That's obviously a truism under our jurisprudence, and the point's well taken. But we don't have those facts here. But the Commonwealth has the phone and two of the three text messages.
Mr. Grimes, you're in your last 10 to 15 seconds, if you could wrap us up, please.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time again. In this case, where the evidence was marginal at best, it is the little things that tip the scale. And here we have admitted evidentiary error, and it ought to result in reversal and remand or dismissal. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.